The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
I'm Jerry Lazzaro. I chair the worship committee here at the Thomas Paine UU Fellowship. And it's my pleasure and honor, once again, to lead us in worship on a Thanksgiving weekend. In tribute to Thanksgiving weekend and to our Soul Matters theme for November 2022, this morning's service is titled, Let us all be grateful for a change. Now, I in no way intended that title to suggest that UUs are unaccustomed to being grateful, and therefore should, for a change, be grateful. I trust that those who gather here embrace the essential practice extolled in the Thanksgiving holiday, namely experiencing and expressing gratitude for all that is our life. And I also trust that we UUs would never think of confining Thanksgiving to one day, one week, one month, right? I trust that UUs realize that Thanksgiving is something we need to practice on a regular, if not daily, basis. After all, giving thanks is life-affirming and soul-nourishing. It's a time-tested, empirically verified, it really is empirically verified, to affirm and promote our third UU principle, encouragement of spiritual growth in our congregations, in ourselves. But being grateful often doesn't come easily for us, especially when we're faced with changes in our lives. Let's face it, change, whether planned or unplanned, expected or unexpected, welcome or unwelcome, is disruptive and can be very stressful and is always, always riddled with uncertainties. But think about it. We know change is inevitable. What did Reverend Andrew remind us of a couple weeks ago? The only constant in life is change. So how could we possibly cultivate in ourselves an authentic, durable attitude of gratitude if we reject life's only constant, if we can't incorporate some sense of gratitude for the changes that life throws at us? With that in mind, let me again welcome everyone here, whoever you are, from wherever you've come, wherever you may be on your life's journey, on your spiritual journey, whatever you must in conscience truly, responsibly believe, however you identify or express your gender, whomever you love, we welcome you and invite you to worship with us this morning, beginning with the lighting of our chalice. The chalice and the flame together symbolize our free faith. And as we light our chalice this morning, we'll recite responsive reading number 512. John will get this up on the screen for us here. The late Reverend O. Eugene Pickett wrote these words. Reverend Pickett ministered to congregations in Florida, Virginia, and Georgia, and also from 1979 to 1985 was the president of our Unitarian Universalist Association. May his prayer of thanks help kindle in us deep feelings of gratitude for all that can get lost in the day-to-day flow of sensations and events that too often we may take for granted. So your responses are in italics. For the expanding grandeur of creation, worlds known and unknown, galaxies beyond galaxies, filling us with awe and challenging our imaginations, for this beautiful yet fragile planet, its times and tides, its sunsets and seasons, for the miracle and joy of human life, its wonders and surprises, its hopes and its achievements, for our human community, our common past and our future hope, our oneness transcending all separation, our capacity to work for peace and justice in the midst of hostility and oppression, for high hopes and noble causes, for faith without fanaticism, for understanding when views are not shared, for all who have labored and suffered for a fairer world, who have lived so that others might live in dignity and freedom, for human liberty and sacred rights, for opportunities to change and grow, to affirm and choose, to experience this gift of life, and as I light the peace lamp, please participate responsively with the words and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us. Thank you. And now let's join in singing our gathering song, hymn number 349, We Gather Together. A little context here. The earliest version of this song appeared in 1597. And it was first published in 1626 in a book of hymns composed by Adrian Valerius, Nederlandsch Gedankklang. The year 1626, right, was just 5 years after the first Thanksgiving Day celebration in the American colonies. Now, the best English translation that I've found of that title, Nederlandsch Gedankklang, is Dutch Songs of Commemoration. What was Valerius commemorating? The Dutch War of Independence, more commonly referred to by historians as the 80 Years' War. Right? The 80 Years' War was a revolt against Spanish rule in Dutch territories, a revolt with very much religious as well as political roots in the growing conflicts between emerging Protestant communities and the Roman Catholic Church and its fervently Catholic, aggressively imperialist monarchs like Philip II of Spain. The version we'll sing features words crafted by Dorothy Kager Sengus and UU minister Reverend Dr. Robert E. Sengus. Their redo of a more than 400-year-old Protestant hymn illustrates how UUs take orthodox sectarian vestiges of a religious heritage and transform it into a liberal, humanistic, universal prayer of gratitude, compassion, and hope. So please rise as able in body and or spirit to join the choir of the First Unitarian Church of Baltimore, Maryland, in singing hymn 349, We Gather Together in Joyful Thanksgiving. to Unitarian Universalism has roots in the Christian tradition, but UUism has certainly progressed. Fundamental Christians would say irrevocably strayed from Christian orthodoxy. Nevertheless, most UUs, myself among them, still find inspiration, wisdom, and guidance in Christian texts, teachings, and rituals, at least in some of them. And UU faith communities do observe, in their own way, major events on the Christian liturgical calendar. Think of the candlelight service we celebrate here every year on December 24th, that is, Christmas Eve. And in the Christian tradition, the four-week period of preparation for Christmas is the season of Advent, right? This year, the first Sunday of Advent happens to be today, November 27th. By acknowledging Advent, we pay tribute to our historical connections to the Christian tradition. But beyond acknowledging that tradition, I believe that for UUs, the spirit of Advent, of a time of waiting, of preparation, of expectation, extends beyond the confines of orthodoxy. In a more universal sense, it marks a time to prepare with open heart and open mind for the future, for something new, for a change, perhaps a life-affirming or life-altering change. Several years ago, I came upon a take on Advent that really resonated with me and may resonate with you as well. Life is a constant Advent season. We are continually waiting to become, to discover, to complete, to fulfill. Hope, struggle, fear, expectation, and fulfillment are all part of our Advent experience. And I've also spoken from this pulpit before on how we could engage in Advent as a spiritual experience. Some of you may recall the four keys to keeping the weeks before Christmas real and spiritually nourishing. One, worship fully. Two, spend less on what matters least. Three, give more of what matters most, that is ourselves and our time. Right? And finally, above all, love all. So in that larger spirit of Advent, I now light the first Advent candle in our TPUF Advent wreath. This first Advent candle symbolizes hope. And we'll light the fourth and final candle, symbolizing peace, during our candlelight service on December 24th, where it will join with the many lights we kindle at that service. I hope all of you are planning to attend that. I know from experience that people, members, and friends have told me that it's one of the most uplifting and meaningful experiences for them in our church year. So that's December 24th, I believe at 5 p.m., right? I think that's going to be a little earlier this year. So here we have our Advent wreath with four Advent candles. The one in the middle is just like you have on the menorah, the candle that lights the other candles, right? And we light the first candle for hope. Here we have it. Ah, there we go. Hope is hard to hope is hard to maintain sometimes in this day and age. Right? Okay. All right. And on successive Sundays here, we'll be lighting the other candles. And I said on Christmas Eve, lighting the last candle, symbolizing peace. In striving to lead principled lives, UUs are asked to affirm and promote seven principles, the third being a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, and the sixth being the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Now, unlike some faith communities that rely on one source or one cultural tradition for inspiration and guidance, UUs find inspiration and guidance in many sources, including wisdom from the world's religions, all of them, from science and from humanistic teachings. Now, personally, I find extraordinary inspiration and guidance in Eastern religious traditions such as Taoism, which, as most of you know, significantly influenced Confucianism and Buddhism, and is still practiced today in communities around the world. Taoist teachers, as did Jesus of Nazareth, conveyed wisdom in the form of stories that we characterize as parables, right? Short, fictitious stories designed to illustrate a religious principle, a basic truth, and/or a moral lesson. And what distinguishes parables from other hypothetical tales, such as moral fables and allegories, is that parables are less direct, less preachy, and more ambiguous. The storyline in a parable is more roundabout. Think of the word parabola, which means, right, a curve, right? In a parable, we're not going from straight from point A to point B here, right? And then that's the end of it, right? No, we kind of go up, and we might even go down, and then we might go up, and then we come to, and we finally do hit a point B, the sort of end of the story, but actually, it's not the end of the story, because that line could continue into infinity, right? Continuing to provoke thought and introspection, right? And since a parable's moral is implied and not stated, the story itself will lend itself to many possible meanings, not just one, as in an Aesop fable, for example, like the hare and the tortoise, slow and steady wins the race. Okay, there it is, bottom line, right? Now, a Taoist parable closely relating to our service this morning is the parable of the Chinese farmer. Perhaps you've heard of it, if not actually heard it, but be that as it may, it certainly bears repeating, and it goes like this. Once upon a time in China, there was a farmer who cared for the little family farm that he had, and in doing so, he had help from his son, his only son, and a horse that they had. Well, one day, as they were out in the fields, the horse was spooked by something and ran off into the woods. They searched and searched, but couldn't find the horse. So they gave up back. Well, word got around to the neighboring farmers that the farmer's horse had run away, and people came around, offered their condolences, telling, oh my gosh, this is terrible. What an awful turn of fortune for you. And the farmer shrugged his shoulders and said, maybe yes, maybe no. We'll see. Well, the farmer and his boy carried on with the work of the farm, and lo and behold, a couple of weeks later, the farmer went out his door, and there was the horse that had run away. But the horse wasn't alone. The horse was now accompanied by a small herd of horses. So they immediately rounded up those horses as best they could, corralled them, and word got around. Neighbors came by to congratulate the farmer on his good luck, saying, oh my gosh, how wonderful this is. Now you have not only one horse, but many horses to help you with this farm work. And the farmer said, oh, maybe yes, maybe no. We'll see. All right. Well, the horses had to be trained, had to be broken in. And as the farmer's son was helping with this process, he was on the back of a horse, which apparently something ran out of the woods, startled all the horses. The horse that the farmer's son was on reared up, threw the farmer's son off. The farmer fell hard to the ground and broke his leg. And in all the hustling and so forth, the horses all ran off. So now the farmer not only lacked a horse, but his son was hobbled and would probably be unable to help him much with the farm work for quite a while. Well, the word got around, the neighbors came, of course, and they said, oh, this is terrible. We feel so sorry for you. You know, what are you going to do? You know, this is such a terrible turn of fortune. And the farmer shrugged his shoulders and said, maybe yes, maybe no, we'll see, right? Well, a couple weeks later, a regiment of the emperor's army came marching through that territory, and they were conscripting, that is, drafting all the able-bodied young men into that army where they would march off to God knows where and fight who knows whom and perhaps never return again, right? Well, when the officials of the army came to the farmer's house, they saw the son was obviously unable to walk, let alone march, and they passed the farmer's son by and went on. Well, the neighbors gathered around soon after that, and some of them, of course, had to give up their sons, and they were saying to the farmer, wow, how lucky you are, how fortunate that your son was spared. And he's not going to march off to who knows where to fight God knows whom, and who knows if he'll ever return. And the farmer said, yep. Now, rather than offer possible meanings of that story and how a faithful Taoist or Buddhist might be encouraged to interpret it, I'd rather you take a few minutes to clear your mind and meditate on this story, perhaps recollecting a change in your life and how, when it occurred, perhaps even still today, you might be hard-pressed to say it was for better or worse, was a blessing or a curse. Perhaps neither, perhaps both. But before we do that, if we have any children leaving our sanctuary to go to RE classes, let's sing them out now. Go now. Are they going? Go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere, everywhere you may go. So let me just usher in a little period here. Please relax. Maybe roll your shoulders, take a few deep breaths. Perhaps close your eyes if that feels comfortable. And let's start a little period where we can maybe take in, see, what does this mean? Can we think of a time in our lives when that ambiguity of change affected us? In a few minutes, we'll hear from two members and one friend of our fellowship who relate how they moved beyond acceptance of change in their lives to an attitude of gratitude for it. Before they do, I just want to offer a brief reflection here on the central place of gratitude in the spiritual health of ourselves and our communities. For decades, I've been studying, researching, and thinking about what religious traditions, philosophers, and now even social scientists and neuroscientists are telling us about gratitude. And one thing that seems to arise out of all of this, I mean, you're talking millennia now of accumulated wisdom, is that gratitude is such an important process, the process of experiencing and expressing gratitude is so central to the process of spiritual development. Because one thing, spirituality does involve feeling connection to something not just within ourselves, but beyond ourselves, perhaps even feeling that what is within ourselves does connect with what is beyond ourselves. And in that process, right, gratitude helps us to get in touch with ourselves. What really matters to us? What do we really want to embrace in our lives, hold on to? What makes us feel good about living? Right? So in getting us in touch that deeply with ourselves, it's connecting us on a very deep level to that inner core of our being. And I don't know if you noticed, there was a quote in the order of service at the top from Marcus Tullius Cicero, a Roman statesman, diplomat, and orator, and philosopher, right, who said, gratitude is not only the greatest of virtues, but the parent of all the others. And that's a head scratcher, you know. I mean, we could say, well, what about courage? You know, I mean, if you don't have courage to live out what you believe or to express the gratitude that you feel, I mean, well, wouldn't courage be? Well, as best I can tell from reading Cicero and what others have said about it, is that what Cicero was getting at was this, that when we experience gratitude, we are experiencing thankfulness for something which we didn't necessarily create or deserve. The source of life that gave us this time of existence, for those in our lives who helped us along the way, in many cases without any expectation of compensation or whatever in return for that, right? And so what he's getting at is that when we are experiencing gratitude, we are connecting ourselves to the larger community, right, and providing a, what's the social science called, a pro-social, right, a pro-social foundation here, that is, for doing good for the community. And that connection extends then beyond to, but what did we say in the beginning, galaxies upon galaxies, right, to all that is out there, that is the source of our life, that gives us all that is our life. And with that in mind, okay, I'd like to ask our first, we did have, oh, I had a, forget the graphic, John, it's all right, okay. We have three, as I said, two members and one friend of our fellowship who are going to share experiences of gratitude with us. The first is Karen McCann, and she's joining us this morning via Zoom. And after Karen speaks, we'll hear from Jan Backus, and finally then from Tony Black. Okay, I'm going to step down and let Karen take over now, followed by Jan and then Tony.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving. A change I had 20 years ago was my husband telling me he couldn't do this anymore. We were on our way out the driveway to run errands on a Saturday morning. I asked him, was he sick? Because I could easily run the errands myself. He said, no, I'm not sick. I mean, I can't do this anymore. Pointing at both of us, moving his hand around in a circle between us. I thought I was going to faint. I thought I was going to be sick. It took me 2 years to get past this moment, to get out of debt, to get over us no longer working as a couple. 20 years have gone by. I have a nice house all to myself half of the time, and the other half, my son, who is 48 and has Down syndrome, is with me. My ex and I have 4 children, and we talk regularly about them and about the weather, sports, what we're doing, our relatives, etc. We are, according to me, friendly. According to him, friends. I am much better off without him. I am debt-free and can easily stay that way. I can be myself, and I didn't even realize that I had lost myself being married to him. I think I married my mother because it was his way or the highway. I now can decide things myself, do things I want to do and not stress over the fact that he wouldn't do them with me. I visit my other 3 children when I want, and there's no stress if my ex is also there. I've told my three girls not to worry about us being around together at the same time because it's no longer an issue with me. It never was with him. He could easily slide in and slide right back out. Amazing. He recently went through stage 4 cancer therapy, some surgery, a year of radiation, and I delivered some food and comfort to him during this time. He's recovered and cancer-free now and back out there hiking every day. There are many happy memories, and I swear just as many unhappy ones, to this 18-year marriage. It's onward and upward for me, however, these days. I no longer look back. I try to be positive and look forward. It's ended up to be a change for the better for me. Thank you.
Good morning. I am extremely grateful to be at this podium today. I'm a Unitarian at heart, and a few changes led me to back to a Christian church, and I look at it as the Christian church without the guilt, because I was raised Catholic. My name is Jan Backus. My pronouns are he, him, and his. I decided that change is pivotal, humbling, and unavoidable. I want to talk about two things, and the first thing is my mental wellness. I was diagnosed very young with mental illness and put on medication. And in the past 5 years, I spent 3.5 of them in an IOP, which stands for Intensive Outpatient Program. I went to 27 hours of therapy a week. And I learned about self-esteem, anger management, the child within, and I feel complete today. I can be happy, I can be satisfied. And I didn't have those things before I went to IOP. So I'm very, very grateful for that. I just thought I was moving to a new town and this whole world opened up for me, and I'm very grateful for that. I grew up as a tomboy until puberty, and then when I was 12, I was diagnosed with scoliosis. I was put in a brace for 23 hours a day for 3.5 years. 3.5 seems to stand out. And at that time, I was diagnosed with chronic suicidal ideation. I've been hospitalized 40 times, and I'm here to tell the story. At age 40, I think it was 47, it was in 2004, I had surgery on my back. It was elective. It was 12 hours long, and it was botched. So when I came home, I couldn't walk. I tried to use a walker. And then I used a walker for a while. I had a cane, that wasn't enough, so I bought another cane. I'm walking around with two canes. And eventually I got down to one cane. And I was in the shower one day and I realized that I didn't need my shower chair. And I was like, this is different. What's different here? And eventually what happened was I was able to walk without the cane, and I might be making this a little bit short, but I'm a little nervous. And I believe that I was healed by the person I call God. And I have today no pain at all. Not even a headache, not a finger ache, nothing. So I consider myself very blessed. I have really, really good people in my life, very devoted friends. My partner, Flo, and my sister, Barbara, have all supported me in this journey, and I feel like I've come full circle. Thank you.
It's good to be back here. 8 days from now, December the 5th, will be the second anniversary of Jonathan's death. We'd been married for 57 years, more than half a century, most, well, virtually all of my adult life. Widowhood is a big change. It's not a change that anyone seeks, even if the end of a partner's suffering is good. Many others in this congregation know of and could talk of widowhood. That change itself does not call for gratitude, but many of the things that have happened since are occasions for thankfulness. I am not conventionally religious. Would I be here if I were? But all the same, to my surprise, a verse of scripture came to me in the first days of my transition. It's from Psalm 118. This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. It came to mind and it stuck with me. I printed it large on some very nice paper and set it where I would see it when I woke. It encouraged me to focus on the present and to live one day at a time, as in truth we always must do. It reminds me too of when I also had COVID. I had been a smoker and knew my lungs must be compromised. I had no confidence that I would survive that virus. Each time I awoke, I had a tremendous sense of relief and gratitude. It was wonderful to realize that I was still alive and still able to breathe. I try to remember that feeling so that I can rejoice and be glad in each new day. This is the day. It is a gift. It is ours no matter what came before or what's coming forward. This is the day. This is the time we can act, can take hold of a new way of being, can help ourselves and others. This day, now, present tense, this is the day. All of this happened when we were deep in lockdown, late in 2020, early 2021. A regular memorial service was not possible. But during the first few days after Jonathan's death, our daughter's congregation, she is Jewish, arranged to Zoom one of the nights of Shiva, the traditional home gathering after a death. I attended, our children did, some of our extended family and a few friends joined in, and members of that congregation in California. Their traditional prayers were chanted and spoken, but with explanations for those of us who did not read and understand Hebrew or Aramaic. And after the service, we were given time to share memories and thoughts. It was a small group, and we were together only in that strange virtual way. But it was good. I am grateful for the technology that made that possible. Grateful to be living at a time when, though far apart geographically, we can still be together. Also during this time, one of my Meadowood friends sent me a reading that had been given to her when she lost her husband. It's about grief, about loss. People grieve for many reasons, certainly for loss of a loved one. sometimes the loss of a pet or a friendship or of an opportunity or even loss of one of your abilities. The reading, which is attributed to Donna Van Lira, is short. Grief never ends, but it changes. It is a passage, not a place to stay. Grief is not a sign of weakness nor a lack of faith. It is the price of love. A passage, not a place to stay. It never ends, but it changes. Healing thoughts. Now, in that time of isolation, members of the TPUF board reached out to us by phone, checking on our welfare. And in one phone call, the board member who was in touch with me reported that someone else told her, "Tony is strong. She will be all right." That affirmation also helped. To hear of my strength strengthened me. Does that make sense to you? More recently, a dear neighbor, a lively woman, now 102 years old, looked up at me during conversation and said, "You are lighter now and more open." She confirmed what I already suspected. I have changed. I am changing still. The last time I was single, I was 21 years old and really knew nothing of life. This is so very, very strange. So I experienced major change, not of my choosing, not a happy one, but out of that change has come thankfulness. I am grateful, first of all, that I have this day, that we have this day. I am glad, too, that the religion of my past reminds me to rejoice and be glad. I'm grateful, too, for friends who shared healing words, and I give thanks for today's technology that lets us be together in spite of distance. Finally, I am especially grateful for community, the community of family, the community of my small village, Meadowood, and the community of this fellowship. Blessed be.
Wow, a great ovation of thanks for the speakers this morning, who through their experiences show us that gratitude is so essential to our feelings of health and wellness and our feelings of connection to others. And even in crises, even when we're faced with changes that we never wanted, right, would never have asked for, we can still find something in those experiences to be grateful for and say to find something to rejoice and be glad in as we face each day. So let's now extinguish our chalice. And I'd like to do so with words crafted by Kerry MacDonald, who
Jerry,
is the executive.
Jerry, you want to do Matters of the Heart? Short, brief, Matters of the Heart?
Yes, we are going to do Matters of the Heart. We absolutely must do Matters of the Heart. I just was so taken in what I heard, I almost forgot. Right, okay, yes. We leave time in our service each week, including this one, for those among us who are experiencing a joy lifting their spirits up or a sorrow weighing their spirit down or concern, to bring that joy or concern to the light of this faith community. If you are here today, John will explain how we can participate. And if you are joining us online, John will also instruct us again on how to get involved in matters of the heart this morning. So, John?
Okay, most of you have been here before. So we do have a group online on Zoom and a number of folks here in the sanctuary. So today we are going to ask those in the sanctuary to come up first and share for matters of the heart. Before we begin with all of that, we will have a short musical interlude presented by Isaac Strader to allow you to gather your thoughts. And once we finish with that, we will begin with sharing, a period of sharing here in the sanctuary for matters of the heart. So hang in there for a second.
So we'll bring this time of sharing to a close by singing something a little different this morning. It's a setting to the music of John Sibelius, his Finlandia hymn, the theme that we all know. And it was penned by a man who was a member of the Unitarian Church that I belonged to in Meadville, Pennsylvania. I didn't know him, he died very shortly after I became associated with it, but I knew his widow very well. And his name was James Curtis. And again, it does give me a great sense of connection to know that there are people out there who will take things from the religious traditions of so many denominations and craft something that is so new and wonderful and speaks to the Unitarian Universalist faith that we share. So this is called May I Who Live. And I believe we're just going to hear the accompaniment and we will sing, right? Because we know the melody, right? Better shut me off here. I should say, it's a great joy to me as a member of this fellowship and also as the chair of the worship committee to know that when the call goes out to people, hey, we'd like you to participate in our service, that people know that we care enough about them and that they care enough about us to speak with us and sometimes about very deeply personal experiences that are difficult to talk about. So that's a great joy to me. As I said, as we extinguish our chalice this morning, I leave you with a prayer for healing crafted by Carrie McDonald, who is executive director of the Unitarian Universalist Association, and said it was a verse from a song that her family used to sing around Christmas time.
Then praise for the past and the present we sing, and trustful await what the future will bring. Let doubt and repining be banished away, and the whole of our lives be a Thanksgiving day. And the whole of our lives be a Thanksgiving day. And I couldn't think of a better song to close our service today than hymn number 128, For All That Is Our Life. After all, what is our life but a progression of changes? Some we choose, some thrust upon us, some welcome, some unwelcome. Some we've learned to accept and even find something to be grateful for in. Some we still struggle to accept and incorporate into a sense of gratitude for all that is our life. And I extinguish this chalice, but not that light of hope which we carry with us to share with those whose lives we touch and whose lives touch ours. Now, Christine Winchester Perry, accompanied by Isaac Strader, will lead us in singing For All That Is Our Life. The lyrics appear on slides on the screen behind me or on your computer screen at home. And then please remain with us afterwards for important announcements about programs and activities here at the Thomas Paine Fellowship, followed by a time of sharing online or in our lobby. So we'll see you in a few. For All That Is Our Life.
And make our own days glad. For needs which others serve, for services we give, for work and its rewards, for hours of rest and love, we come with praise and thanks. For all that for sorrow we must bear, for failures, pain, and loss, for each new thing we learn, for fearful hours that pass, we come with praise and thanks. For all that is our life, for all and make us